All right. So this talk is actually makes a great follow-up talk to James' talk that we just had, and because I'm very much interested in the interested in interacting with the dynamics of things, and in particular doing planning in that domain. And so let's get started. Let me put this talk in the context of some of the previous talks. I just look at Chris Landers's work and I say, wow, I don't know, am I just solving the wrong problem? I am solving a different problem. Let me just use this as just a motivator for solving a different problem. So the problem I'm after looking at solving is, the poetry in motion problem, right? I mean, so you get a motion like this that's it's not necessarily telling a story. The cat's going from A to B, but it sure looks graceful and it sure looks good. How can we do that? How is it that, a squirrel can scramble up a tree and jump from branch to branch and perform all these very complex motions and do it very successfully? So my focus is more on related to constraints and optimization or viewing motion in those terms. Okay, and so in this kind of view of the world, physics becomes a constraint. Control also becomes a constraint. You have a goal that might be you can consider that a soft constraint, or it might be a hard constraint. What is feasible? So again, you might have constraints on the geometry of your collision path, as James was mentioning in his work, and also he mentioned constraints on the control input, so torque limits, etc. And you might have further constraints on, well, I want to constrain it to what is typical. So if there's 20 ways for me to cross that room, well, I want to cross the room in a way that's actually typical for a person to walk across the room. And so normally, of course, an animator integrates all this. They integrate all this in their head, and manage to mediate between these various constraints and do so very efficiently. An obvious point. There's plenty of science to be done here. And so computational motion is kind of a nice phrase, I think, to describe this kind of field. It's one I borrowed from Dinesh's door. Dinesh had this computational motion sticker on his door at UBC, so yeah, I'll have to see if I can peel that off your door now, Dinesh, and stick it on my door. But anyhow, just to again, I'll place this a comment on one of Eugene's questions. What's hard to do? What constitutes a hard problem? I think one of the hard problems is trying to figure out which constraints are most relevant to whatever task that you're doing, and that the constraints change on you all the time. So at one moment, it might be a torque limit. At the next moment, it might be a geometric problem, etc. And also, so this really ties in with the area of hybrid systems, simply because whenever you build a controller, both the dynamics and the control for motions involves making all kinds of transitions between different regimes of motion, right? And so most walk controllers have a regime where, the swing leg's in the air, and then you switch regimes when the foot hits the ground because the dynamics, suddenly change very quickly, and now you're in a new regime of operation. And so it's difficult to plan in a continuous way between these regimes. And so the regimes kind of represent a discrete aspect of the problem, and then when you're within a local regime, well, then you can do nicely continuous things. All right. So here's another kind of way of looking at the world. Where can you get motions from? So A, you can have the user create motions. That certainly works pretty well, and people do amazing things there. You can draw on real motions, motion capture, or else you can revert to something more procedural. And so basically the same diagram also applies just as well to audio, right? So you can record waveforms. You can generate sounds algorithmically. I suppose you can just make the sounds yourself. Or you start to introduce user control over the sounds, right? So you have waveforms, and then you play them from a keyboard, and so that you as the user are mediating between the recorded data, and so that's your form of interaction. So I really like to describe a lot of things in terms of these three kind of fundamental sources of motion. Now, if you look at a point up here, so in the algorithm space, so we're building controllers, trying to have some kind of automated smarts that or a control strategy that can control a simulated entity or can control my simulated cat, then you're working up at this point in the space. Of course, you find out that you know control is a very difficult problem, there's a number of things you can do, and so one is you can look for you know control problems that you can solve or that we know how to solve. That's a good strategy for making some progress. And so here you can get, for example, some. I like to contrast looking at one end of the spectrum, you know, simple motions for complex models, and then you can have complex motions for simple models. Those are both things that we kind of know how to do. And most of the work I'll be presenting today really sits at the end of complex motions for simple problems, okay? And obviously where we have to go is we have to bring we have to bring them towards the middle. So you can do complex motions for complex problems. A brief recap of some other things that we've done is you can look at existing solutions, and so if you're building, you can draw on motion data and pull that towards the algorithm side. And so as you go in this direction, if you start from motion capture, you can do model extraction, or else you can think of it as doing parameter fitting. If you start with the algorithm and then go in this direction, again, you kind of want to meet somewhere in the middle there. And then eventually you have this element of user control where you might have, say, motion graphs, which I'd put, you know, somewhere over here, and then motion graphs that you can now control, you know, starts to pull it towards this direction again. But continuing on with some other approaches, you know, you can share the work. You can say, wow, control sure is difficult. Let's divide and conquer. Someone works really hard on walking. Someone else works really hard on running. And we'll just acknowledge their hard problems, and let's have different people work on different problems, and then we'll integrate the solutions. And so I'll quickly show one animation clip from that, from some previous work. Most of what I'll be talking about today is wow, control is difficult. Let's let the user solve the problem. I'll elaborate on that in a second. So this is the work of Petrus Feloutsas, and who finished his PhD here, and he's now at UCLA. And so one of our goals here was to look at how can some control strategy, in order to share it, it helps if it has a model of what it's capable of doing and what it's not capable of doing. And so that was one of the key contributions here is this thing is switching through various controllers. And now you probably can't read this, but the name of the current controller is active there. And so this is a physically based simulation of this person falling down and getting back up. And so it's going through a sequence of, I think it's about five or six controllers. Each of one is kind of well suited to some intermediate task. And then the nice thing here is that these controllers are then relatively easy to string together. That being said, designing the controllers themselves is still very hard. So we can look at just a few more other points in the space. And so a lot of current games, I would place them right about here in the space. And so when you get a game, any kind of a console game, the majority of the space on your CD-ROM that the game ships on is now motion capture data. It used to be audio, actually, and now I'm told it's motion capture data. Well, I know. John says it's motion capture data now, but I know, we could argue about that. Anyhow, there are significant amounts of motion capture data in there. And then, of course, they build, you know, they don't call them motion graphs, they call them motion trees, and they drive them to, which are basically, you know, largely stitched together by hand to get the key sequences they want. And then, of course, the user, again, it has some illusion of control, and I'll maybe talk a bit more about this, the so-called illusion of control, later. And so, so what I wanted to do, one of the things I wanted to do was to experiment with pushing this point a bit farther towards the user. And you'll notice that I'm completely away from the motion capture for this next bit of work. So let's explore this point in the design space. So let the user solve the problem. Okay, so we're going to split the work between the user and the computer. So we have this large set of constraints. So we'll let the computer help with the constraints, and so the computer is going to take care of the physics, and also, as I'll be showing it in the second part of the talk, it'll be taking care of what I call reasonable control. Okay, and actually, this is something that James wonderfully introduced, where you have this filter that stops you from doing stupid things, and so we're actually exploring this direction as well, and so I think it's a wonderful area to be exploring. All right, so back to the user. What's the user? What will the user be doing? Well, he'll be using his own motor skills, and that's one of the things that I'll try to tell you that's unique about the tool that I'll show you. The other thing is in the context of a game, man, people love optimization, and I'll love doing the optimization themselves, and you'll see about that shortly. The other aspect is reasoning about the motion. People are very good about that, and again, this ties into this idea of hybrid systems, and people are really good at being able to piece together and say, oh, I can solve this part of the puzzle this way and that part of the puzzle that way, and that kind of thing. Okay, so this interactive dynamics is part of a game that I worked on called Ski Stunt Simulator, and one of my motivations here was a lot of existing games I felt didn't capture. We're more based on straight visual appeal. So you have this 3D world. You know, if you're a snowboarding game, a 3D world, and you can jump up and do all these stunts in the air, etc. It was more based on the visual appeal rather than the true appeal of many sports. And so I'm a big fan of many sports. And so the fun of sports really has two elements to it. When you distill it, one element is, wow, give me a new piece of equipment. Give me some terrain, some props to play with that piece of equipment on, and then just this is fun exploring what can you do with this piece of equipment on this slope, and it's just fun to be exploring that space. And then showing off is the other fun part, and that you know ties more into the social aspect of various sports. You can look at what I'm doing. It really is fitting more. If you look at these elements of exploration, really will place this game more in the kind of simulation genre of SimCity, as in, you know, here's the set of rules of what the system can do, and you know what kind of feasible solutions does that produce. So it's more in that category of kind of game genre than the sports genre. So let me, and so one of the key people I'll just drop into to go straight directly to a demo. Again, one of the key people who did a lot of the coding and development with me was Cedric Lee, and so he's an amazing guy. All right, so let's fire this thing up. And okay, so let me first just demonstrate to you what's going on here. So the interface, how does the interface work? Very, very simple interface. Mouse down, he crouches down. Mouse up, he stands up. Mouse left, he leans back. Mouse right, he leans forward, and it does the right things on the diagonals. What's happening underneath is there is a where is it? There's a simulator. Okay, so red arrows are some version of ground reaction forces. Red dot is center of mass. Green dot, sorry, green line is just a trace of the center of mass. This is a four-link planar articulated figure. And that's basically it for the simulator. I wanted to say how the control connects to the physics. That's done through, so there's PD controllers, proportional derivative controllers, so virtual springs and dampers at the three joints. You are directly setting the target positions for those joint angles using the mouse, but the mouse only has 2 degrees of freedom. This has three actuators, and so it's not completely a one-to-one mapping, but it is just a linear mapping. So one of the interesting things that you can now do with this scenario is you're away from the standard game scenario of you push a button to do a flip and possibly a combination of buttons to do some flip or stunt. And now you're basically free to explore what can you do with this character, right? And so if I want to do a backflip, well, perhaps I should start crouched down forward and also down, and then I'll throw my upper body back, build up my angular momentum going backwards. Let's pretend I'm in the air now. Once I'm in the air, I want to crouch down so that I lower my moment of inertia to complete the spin, and then once I land, I'll extend. Okay, so now you can reason about that motion in this kind of pose space, but of course, once you execute it has to be done with the right timing. And so this is where something like a 2D input device is just exquisite for you being able to have very precise control over both the position and the timing. And so, and again, this is because we all have years of practice with cursive script and writing and everything else. And so, again, roughly what I did to do that backflip was roughly something that looks like kind of a circular motion in this part of the space. And so, if I do that more quickly, with a bit more practice. All right, so anyhow, I'm out of practice, but see how easy it is? All right, now, so in similarly, you can do front flips. If you fall on your back, you can get up, da da da. And so, you gradually just start discovering all these little things. So, okay, so now that you've trained, let's take them out into the real world here. So, I should take them. I don't know. Whoops. Go here. So take them off a real jump. So get going here. So I'll try a front flip. Front flip. Whoa. This is a big front flip. Okay, he hit a bit hard, and so he goes he goes unconscious when he hits his head too hard or else his skis come off, and then so he goes kind of limp there. So now this is where you get into this fun element of, oh, you have the terrain, what can you do? And so at the beginning, I swore I was not going to make a violent game, but then it was just too fun torturing the poor guy, so you can have this guy jump across and torture him all kinds of ways. And it is actually possible. I think it's possible to make it across here, so. And so let's see. So let's take him onto some other terrains. So okay, so you can do some other things here. Again, it's kind of stuck there. Now, of course, the fact that the falls are entertaining is what keeps you in the game while you're actually learning the to play the thing, right? Okay. Now it is possible to make it across here. He got his hand stuck. Go figure. All right. So now, again, you can interact with other props and things, right? Actually, what I'm going to do here is just put this into demo mode and just talk over some of the things. So now, one of the fun things is this. So there will be a stack of two crates here, and in advance, you basically don't know whether it's possible, for example, for the character to stay balanced on top of this stack of crates. You know, is it possible? Well, I don't know. You'll see shortly. I came up with some terrains where you think it's impossible, and then people actually discover a way to do it. And so this again relates to the ability of people to actually kind of to perform these kinds of optimizations and just do crazy things given the right amount of control. And so again, the key difference with kind of more standard games is you have much finer control over the kind of thing that you want to do. And so now this is a kind of a mechanical universe version of it, right? So I can set up my takeoff ramp here. Actually, my favorite is putting this wall just right in front of them. And let me just do something reasonable here. So move that out of the way. I'll put a stack of crates here or something. This thing is kind of is a bit of a catapult, so we can move that into place. So this is a bit of a mechanical universe kind of a setup. And so now you can play around with both the terrain you need to do something interesting and the control, right? And so there's the control. Okay. Didn't quite work. So it looks like it might be possible. Again, now I could adjust the terrain, or I could practice a bit more and to see if I can eventually do this, right? I mean, this really looks like it should be possible, right? I mean, I almost made it. And, okay, crouch. Okay, so that didn't work. Anyhow, you get the idea, all right. There's a bunch of other ones. I'll just show this one. This one has the most kind of dynamically simulated pieces. Let me turn on all the forces and all these pieces. So it's a bunch of physics happening there, and these pieces rain down on you, and et cetera, et cetera. There's a bunch of trees. You can crash into trees and things. All right, so that's the basic idea. All right, back to it is. I can talk to you about that afterwards. One of the things that is available is right away is so this is the Java version. So this is an articulated dynamic articulated figure simulation in Java, and this is an older version of the web page. Hello. Okay, just loading up Java. So anyhow, you can do articulated figure simulation in Java. Oops, let me see here. So again, it is basically the same setup. It doesn't have other externally simulated objects, right? So there's only one real dynamic object here, which is the skier, and so it's a bit constrained in that fashion. This is one I wanted to show you. So this was a terrain that I had thrown in here, and I had intended this to be the it's impossible terrain, and so you'll see shortly that, of course, people may have figured out a way to do it, and it's actually And let's just do some more terrains. So anyhow, so you can make endless wonderful puzzles with these terrains, and basically solving these puzzles is a lot of fun. So let's see, what else can we do here? Okay, that didn't work very well. Let me actually try to make it here. All right, okay. Almost made it. All right, so let's get back on track. Okay, so one of the things that was a pleasant surprise is again the only thing, you know, this is a 2D side-scrolling game in the era of 3D games where your average game has a multi-million dollar budget, and so the question is, would people recognize the kind of the appeal of the physics? Would there be an appreciation for that, or are people really kind of stuck on the visual appeal? And it turned out that people did actually. So I basically collect these comments, seeing as it's really hard to make any money off of these things, and so you kind of have to just collect the comments and put them in a box and be happy with that. But people actually mailed me. People continue to mail me. It's kind of irritating now, actually. just all these comments, right? I think I will just play the ravine and hut jump for the rest of my life. It's a very addictive game. There's a review. I don't know. You can find reviews in Spanish and French and da 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 da. Now, again, one of the things I wanted to go after was, again, to capture some of the real elements of sports, and sports, are all about dynamics. And so, and one of the tests of whether it would be compelling or not would be whether people would actually say, oh, look, see what I did. And so, because that doesn't happen so much with the conventional games. With the conventional games, it's usually, oh, look, I got this high score. And but how you got that high score? Well, it's ultimately doesn't. It's not that individual. Whereas this tends to be, again, because of the diversity, you can it tends to be people get to be more drawn into it. So there's a stunt gallery, and so people actually mail me their stunts, and so. Poetry in motion, that's what I call it. So there you go. Who would have thought, right? I mean, so, and yeah, so I didn't have an end to my world, right? And so if you actually make it, you just ski merrily off the end of the world, which is kind of fun. Let's see, what another one here. So the PC version has this save feature built in, precisely so that you can save your stunts and say and whatever, show them off to other people. okay, so now he's finally unconscious there. But now the funny thing was is the PC version, which anyone can play, and doesn't have the save feature, right? Because I wanted to make it somewhat brain dead so that people would be interested in the fuller version. So it doesn't have the save feature, and so people can't send me their stunts, right? Because but nevertheless, people sent me their stunts, and so people were like videotaping this thing, and so they must have had a video camera like on all the time, right? Because you can't, of course, predict when you'll be successful or not, and so here's just how crazy people get to be, right? Okay, so here we go. Hang on, you gotta listen to the audio. Hang on, it gets even better. Hang on.
Oh
Hang on. Oh, at the end he says, "Oh, I'm such a loser." But anyhow, yeah. So sorry, Karan. Yeah.
No, no. I'm just saying it would be interesting how to take this and try and reconstruct the system of course that created it, so you could get the same version from ABIs that people would send you.
Sure. Oh, well. Okay. No. So. I mean. That's actually a decision we had to make, right? Do you save the mouse input, which is ultimately the most compact description of the motion, or do we save or something intermediate where you save the motion of the character? And so in the end, we save the motion of the character just because people are running it, just because of the platform discrepancy problem. And so,
is
but
an easily
invertible problem? Can you do the inversion? Oh yeah, that's interesting. It should be in principle, but it's probably badly conditioned in some parts. But good question. Anyhow, there is hope for doing complex motions with simple characters. So this thing has had 100,000 downloads, and the Java version gets played 300,000 times per day. 300,000 runs per day, and so 4 runs per second as we speak. People are bashing away, you know. It's go figure. My hope is really that you can take this kind of beyond the gaming world and use it as a sports prototyping tool. So again, with a more sophisticated version, more sophisticated simulation, more higher degree freedom input, what stunts are possible? How do you, now you can interactively play around with the timing requirements for various things, and you can do what if analysis, etc. Also as a teaching tool, right? In terms of the kinds of simulations that all of us who kind of work with physics-based animations are doing, we should really take some effort and bring those over to the world of biomechanics and have them use this as an interactive teaching tool, because you can just see all these things happen. So there's a couple of interesting thoughts here. One is that we had originally planned on doing some direct performance animation of this, so that have a video camera trained on me. I am the skier. My body is the input device. To talk, I just go like this. To lean back, I go like this, etc. Now, it's not actually clear that's actually a better mapping than these gestures with a mouse, simply because when if I'm maintaining my balance and I want my skier to quickly throw his body up and backwards, well, that's difficult for me to actually complete that action, while in the meantime I still have my own balance constraint to maintain, right? So I'm not completely free to do whatever I want with my body in the meantime. And so anyhow, that's something that we'll probably still explore at some point. Now one of the interesting things that just falls out of the interface is this concept of motion chunking. And so originally, when you try to do any particular motion with this, you're really thinking, you have to do a lot of thinking, oh, what do I have to do here, what do I have to do there, etc. But you really get this classic motion chunking effect that happens, where after a while, it's really, you just do the gesture, and then you see if he falls on his back, you know that you just have to do this other gesture for him to get up. And so what's nice about that is now, you're just taking advantage of your natural ability to learn these kinds of tasks, and to in an appropriate fashion, and now you've effectively performed this abstraction of the motion primitives, while underneath at any point in time you really still have fairly fine control over the motion. So I think that's an interesting characteristic for these. For this kind of interface, but of course there are problems, right? So if you're doing a backflip, there's this inversion of the reference frame, where in the original, in the interface, moving the mouse to the left makes the character lean back, and mouse to the right leans forward, and so that's obviously inverted when he's upside down and that kind of thing. Whereas, for you as a skier, if you were to really do a flip, that would that never really gets inverted, assuming you're doing that, assuming that you do these things from kind of an egocentric reference frame. Now, one of the other problems is that with the input device being the mouse or a stylus, this actually works best with a stylus, okay with a mouse, and actually fairly poorly with like a gamepad console joystick, simply because those are primarily directional, and it's actually very hard to think of trying to sketch a circle with those. Those input devices tend not to be better suited to directions rather than to the more complete gestural input that you need for this. Now, one of the issues here is you don't really have any feedback as to, you know, if you have the character jump up and down, and if you're not watching the screen, you have no idea whether the character has his feet on the ground or not. And so, whereas in reality, you know, I can jump up and down with my eyes closed, and obviously I can feel the ground forces, and I know when I'm on the ground, and I know when I'm not. And so one of the things we've done is we've hooked this up to a haptic input device. This is kind of an interesting abstract use of haptic input devices. And so haptic force feedback input devices, it's basically a robot that you grab a hold of, right, and you can push it, but it can also push back, and then you can program the pushback. And so the and those typically get used to actually, you know, abstract real physical environments, so that you can like the kind of thing you saw in Dinesh's talk. So here's a situation where you can impose an interesting abstraction on top of that, where what you're controlling ultimately with the with your mouse is, let's say the Y position on the mouse might, let's say that controls the knee joint of the character, and so that controls the target angle. And so now, if you use haptics, what's nice is that if you have an external force that gets applied, you will effectively feel that, because that external force will tend to push this back, and so that gets converted to its effect will be noticed in terms of a torque, and because what you're controlling is connected to the target position for that particular joint, you will actually feel that torque, and so that actually gets reflected in a wonderfully natural fashion, because now when you land the skier, you go boom, right, and you get that compression that just happens. Whereas otherwise, you know, I can just leave my input device sitting where it is, and if it lands with the legs fairly straight, well then it will actually try to maintain that constraint, as opposed to doing the follow through. And so you can drive some of that dynamics all the way back to the input device. And so this actually leads onto the next topic, which is haptic control envelopes. And so this is primarily Magic Kalisiak's work, and then also with Juicy DiPietro and Karen McLean at UBC on the haptic side of things. So the idea here is to further explore this idea of working with involving the user directly with abstractions of the dynamical system that you're controlling. And so in the case of the skier, you are controlling some kind of abstraction. You could have a system which says, oh, you know, to do a front flip, it can guide you around in a certain fashion. So you could use it for guidance. But the more interesting thing that we want to work with right away is actually to provide the safety net, or James was calling the dynamic filter that stops you from doing, if you have some goal in mind, so it might be maybe you're controlling a walking character and you don't want the walking character to fall, but aside from that constraint, you want to have as full a control over the thing as possible, right? And so again, tying this into James's example, where he had the robot where he was kind of manipulating the leg around, and then the system was controlling the other joints to maintain the balance. Again, it's the same kind of thing here. We want to provide, you provide the intent or an abstraction of the intent on the input side. It converts that intent as best it can into something that's doable. Now the interesting spin on that here is what happens when you are violating what's going on. Now, the natural effect of what the filter will do is the filter stops listening to you, right? Because you say, oh, lean farther and farther forward, and the filter says, no, you're not going there. Now, what's happening is the filter is effectively removing control from you, right? But the and so where this is an interesting use of the haptics is what's irritating is when you lose your control, but you don't know that you're losing control. And so one of the applications of the haptics here is we actually have the haptics push back on you, such that the haptics is basically saying no, don't go there. And so it's giving you feedback as to what you can and cannot do. And of course, when dealing with these dynamical systems, the shapes, these feasible regions can actually be complex in shape, again, as James was talking about. So we want to apply this to dynamic environments, so, you know, a character that you want to control the balance of, where these systems get to be very rich and complex is when you have some interesting character dynamics. So let's say you have different trajectories of a person on a bicycle going around this pole, okay? And so there's really two separate categories of constraints that are operating here. One is, you know, don't hit the pole, so some geometric set of constraints. And then the other set is the constraint on your bicycle, you know, don't lose your balance, right? And so the interplay of these two sets of constraints can actually be pretty interesting. And So Magic showed you a video of this of an early prototype of these control envelopes in operation just during the DGP lab introductions. And so what I'll do now is just briefly explain the fundamentals of that in a bit more detail. And again, this is all of Magic's Magic's nice work. Okay, so here's a car. It's on a road. These are the sides of the road: left side, right side. So these are the fundamental constraints. Don't drive off the road. These here are just markers to let you know that you're moving forward. These arrows here will be referred to. If they're green, it means you're okay to turn right. You're okay to steer straight. You're okay to steer left. Okay, so these are some measure of what's available to you in terms of feasible inputs. Now, this road is just, again, it's just the simplest example to start off with. This road goes on forever, and so the state space of this thing is given by the position of the car on the track, so X, and as well as the orientation of the car. Okay, so this car can be in various orientations, and so here in this is the phase space or the state space of this thing. So X is represented by the X position. The orientation is represented, you know, here the car is pointing downwards, here the car is pointing up, and so here the car is gradually starting to turn left. And so if you drive in a circle going to the right, if you're constantly going to the right, then that means that you're constantly moving down in terms of this phase space. And this phase space wraps around from the bottom back to the top, if you're constantly turning in a circle, if you're driving for this car going straight up, that corresponds to going like this on the if this car was facing sideways, then the car would just follow this trajectory in the state space, so it's retaining the same y value here simply because it's not changing in orientation. If it were to just drive straight sideways, okay. Now, if you were to drive straight from this position, then it's basically a fixed point in the state space, right? Because I'm not, X doesn't change if I continue driving straight, and my orientation also doesn't change. Okay, so you get fixed points along this axis, fixed points along that axis. And driving in a circle, well, if this thing drives in a circle, well, X varies sinusoidally this way, and my orientation is also obviously continually changing. And so you follow on along this sinusoidal trajectory, and you go off the bottom, and you come back on the top. So now, what are these things? These things are, so the red dot represents the current state of the car. This car is in trouble. It's about to hit the wall. It hasn't hit the wall yet, but basically, it's going to hit the wall no matter what it does. Hence, this is an illegal part of this phase space. And so this refers to, you can think of this as being kind of the dynamic analog of something James talked about, this where you, in order to plan the path of a robot through a scene, you can inflate the size of the obstacles by the size of the robot and do your collision tests that way. And so that's in some sense what's happening here, although here there's also this dynamic component that participates into the shaping of this. Now this is obviously just a polygonal approximation of what the true analytic solution would be to that boundary. Now there's a couple of other interesting regions here, this region and that region. So the car state is there. The car is driving to the left, but it's just coming away from the wall. This is effectively an unreachable part of the state space, right? Because you can't get there if the car can only go forward. You couldn't have got there in the first place. And these are the unreachable parts of the space. These are the uncontrollable parts of the space where you're in trouble no matter what. And so here's a situation where, okay, the car is here. The only thing it can do at this point, in effect, is to avoid going here is effectively to take this path here, which actually corresponds to making a hard right turn in order to avoid going into the wall. And again, this is just an early example that we've been working on just to lay the groundwork for what do these spaces look like, how can we build these boundaries. And then the goal is to extend them to higher dimensional more systems that have more interesting dynamics and more potentially much more complex control envelopes. And so there's some interesting machine learning techniques that we're applying to actually control the shape of these boundaries in the high dimensional state spaces. All right, and I was going to bring in my preliminary demo, but my network card, my wireless card doesn't work because my system crashed about 2 days before, and the one thing I didn't reinstall was my wireless card driver. So I apologize. But you've seen a preliminary demo in the GGP introduction. So some challenges for these haptic control envelopes. Well, you know, how do you represent and compute these envelopes? And again, I like doing a lot of sports, and you know, it's my theory that we actually have pretty good representations of what the shape of these limits really looks like, and again, that we have good estimates of these kind of things. Now, one of the nice things here is that we can actually provide a warning in advance that says, let's say you're driving straight to the wall. Okay, the wall's here, car is driving straight to the wall. At some point, if you waited until the last second to perform a correction, then suddenly you would have to do a really hard right to escape the collision. Now, what we want is some smoother transition where the system says, gradually increases its hint to you over time that, look, something bad is about to happen. You better start taking avoidance action, some action. And so now one of the interesting things is that you can actually mediate between the system's suggestion and your own opinion of how close you want to push the system to its limit by actually just pushing back. And so one of the nice features of this is that the haptic interface is actually a nice way of mediating between your control, your desire of what you want the system to do, and the computer's control that says, oh no, you're something bad will happen. And so again, you can actually the computer and you are literally fighting over the control to the extent that each of you believes that you know what you want to do. And so what's kind of nice is, you know, you can take this literally, you know, pushing the limits. So if you really want to cut that corner very tightly, you know, it will let you do that. But you have to push to do that. One of the conclusions here is, you know, you can have, I think, you know, some really rich interaction with dynamical systems. Again, looking at complex motions for simple systems, building up some understanding of those. And so, again, we're really exploiting some human motor skills on the interface side. And so I think that falls out in a fairly nice way. There's some really nice thing. There's a lot of work to be done here in augmenting it with the smart constraints. And so the games people have a lot of nice workarounds here in that they make it seem like you always have control. But again, there's a lot of situations in games where your commands are ignored or altered to some extent to avoid something unintentional from happening, and so that has to be fit carefully into the design of the system such that it still feels like you have control, but you don't necessarily. So that's it. Future work. Okay, just a bunch of other projects that I think are there's plenty of interesting directions to go into that don't necessarily tie in with these previous directions. All kinds of interesting work related to motion perception. I was having a number of interesting conversations with various people on motion perception, and there's a lot of interesting aspects to that. Motor control. There's a nice paper I read recently by Zubin Garamani, who's actually a machine learning type, but he started out with he started out his paper with saying, to the motor control chauvinist, the motor control problem is all there is, right? Because ultimately everything we do is of course mediated through a body, and ultimately is a control problem, and so it'd be nice if we made some progress on these things. And so walking is a really irritating one that we definitely should be able to solve, but turns out to be just surprisingly hard to really get right. In terms of a really dynamic version of walking, where you can just push the thing and it will recover, etc. And I think one of the key issues for motor control is again this issue relating to hybrid systems, right? You're always trying to figure out what are currently the important constraints, and so I think this in any given sequence of motions you do to accomplish a task, the important constraints are constantly switching on you, and so that's part of what makes the problems difficult. I think we'll be seeing all kinds of interesting hybrid kinematic and dynamic models. With motion capture, there's no need to do, if your model is just walking, why simulate? Use your motion capture data, and again, gradually figuring out to which areas do the dynamic models adapt well, and to which areas, how much of the behavior space can the kinematic models cover? And the kinematic models can cover a lot. But there's certainly plenty of room for dynamic models. And, interfaces, right? I have the idea of the motion in my head, right? I can be playing the same motion over and over in my head. How do I get that out of my head and onto recorded, right? And so Karan has a great word, or maybe you could borrow that from Ravine, right? Or no, this must be a Bill Buxtonism, right? That says, humans don't have the video out, right? So we have audio in, audio out, right? Video in, but no video out. And so with that, I'll wrap it up.